Hello, and welcome to A Writer's Journey, the podcast that will talk about everything the aspiring author wants to know about going from blank page to published. I'm Sarah Whitford, and today my co-host Terrence Zepke is going to be leading the charge for this, which is our 10th episode. Very exciting. And the topic is 3 keys to getting or not getting your novel published. And she has some really great ideas that she has put together from her years of experience writing, publishing. As I've said many times before, Terrence has published 24 books, and she knows what she's talking about. So without further ado, Terrence, lead the charge.
Okay, well, Sarah, I've come up with this formula based on all the things that I have learned through the years, sitting through writing classes, conferences, workshops, looking at writing blogs and books about writing and all, and this is what I've kind of condensed it down to, and I think it's really simple. So if everybody wants to get a pen and write this down, and if you're driving or walking or doing chores or whatever and you don't have a pen, just remember the 3 P's, and that is plot, pacing, and protagonist. Now, recently we discussed what you need to know about the protagonist and character development in general during our show, Who's Your Protagonist? So you can listen to that episode if you missed it, or go back and listen to it again to get that. So we've already talked about that. But that leaves plot and pacing. So let's start with the plot, Sarah.
Okay.
All you need to remember is plot equals goal. What is the goal of the protagonist? This is going to be your main plot. For example, best-selling author Janet Ivanovich has a series, a Stephanie Plum series, featuring Stephanie Plum as a bond enforcement agent. So her goal in every book, which is the main plot, goal equals plot, is always to catch the FTA. That's the failure to appear.
Okay.
In bond enforcement language. And she does that so she can pay her rent and buy another car, because in her books, her car always gets blown up at some point during the story. it's a trademark thing. So that's what, you know, you need to think of your plot should include 3 C's. Again, I've broken it down. 3 P's and now 3 C's. And then within the 3 C's, you've got your conflict or your crisis. You've got your complications. And you've got your climax or your conclusion. Okay? So using the same example again, Stephanie Plum always has all kinds of other stuff going on while she's trying to track down the FTA, such as family and relationships issues. She has stuff with her family. Her mother's wanting her to settle down, get married like her sister, have children, get out of this dangerous profession. And so there's always these funny stories because she lives in the burg in New Jersey, and there's that funny stuff. And so then she's also torn between 2 men. And this has been pretty much, I think, since the beginning of the series. She has this sometimes boyfriend and cop, Joe Morelli. And then there's this tall, dark, and muscular hunk named Ranger who owns a private security company.
Okay.
And she works for him sometimes when she's short of rent money, which is a lot. So as you can see, the author has created lots of situations where there's conflict, there's crisis, there's complications. Usually someone's trying to kill her, and that may or may not be related to the FTA she's pursuing. But those are complications, crisis, and then your climax, your conclusion. So this is an important thing to remember here out of all of this. Your plot should thicken. So in other words, your tension must build. So does that make sense to you, Sarah?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, it does make sense. And you know, I just thought about this, and I don't want to forget to mention it later. Well, if it comes up later in the episode, I know we've talked about the protagonist. But in thinking about this and in thinking about a series, a series like the ones that Janet Ivanovich writes, I don't know that we talked about the character arcs in that episode about protagonists, who's your protagonist. And we talked about different types of character arcs and whether it's, you know, it's a positive character arc where the protagonist changes over the course of the story, or whether or not they are largely static and remain the same, a flat character arc, or if they go down on a downward spiral. And when it comes to plot, I read something interesting the other day that suggested that in stories that do have sort of a flat character arc, where you have a pretty steady protagonist, they're not really, it's not like they're starting off at one point and then ending up, you know, enlightened or at some completely different point. You have a situation rather than a story. And I didn't know what I thought about that, because I'm thinking you still have a story even if it's a situation. You know, but it was talking about, for instance, in action movies where you have an action star, and the action star goes through, and he doesn't change a whole lot, but then what you have rather than a story is a situation, which is still wildly entertaining. That's not particularly helpful. I just figured I'd throw that in because it was interesting to me. I hadn't thought about it that way.
Okay, yeah, that's good. All right, well, let's also talk about here, there are techniques that you can use, which I think is helpful for writers. For me, being so organized, I like to know the specific path to get from A to Z. So there is the path. There are techniques that you can use, and this is what will trip a lot of writers up. And I know when I say this, you're going to be like, oh, yeah. But the first one is foreshadowing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a bit about what you do in foreshadowing. It's where you tease the reader. And maybe you want to talk a bit about this. I don't know.
I would love to. I know that in my project, my manuscript that I'm working on revising. I'm almost done with revisions.
You can say the title.
Smuggler's Gambit. The Smuggler's Gambit. That's right. But in my novel that I'm working on, you know, I actually had some emotional responses to some foreshadowing that takes place in this book, because there are some things that sort of happen throughout the course of the book, and the reader, as they're reading, they don't understand yet the significance of these things, but I know, and I knew when I was writing them, but I was like, oh, this is so exciting, you know, but the key is, you don't, you know, through foreshadowing, you don't want it to be something that's going to be blatantly obvious. You don't want it to be something that you're thinking, oh, well, this is going to figure in later, and this is how it's going to, you know, you don't want to give anything away with it. But it's good because you're building, you know, you're building complexity, you're weaving the plot together, and it's powerful when people come to a later point in your story, and then they're able to look back and see where you, you know, and they can sort of say, oh, I see what you did there. That's, you know, that's pretty cool. So.
Now, I like to do this at the end of a chapter, like a little cliffhanger, so that it will force them to turn the page and start the next chapter.
Okay.
But you don't have to do that. You know, you can do that anywhere in a chapter, in a scene. You know, you're just dropping something in that makes the reader go, whoa, wait a minute, I got to figure this out. I got to find out more about this, you know. So it's just a tool that you use. And so I don't know if you want to say any more about how you have done yours. Have you done yours at the end of a chapter or in the middle?
When I think about foreshadowing, I don't – see, this is a semantics thing, because I think we're thinking about it in two different ways. When I think about foreshadowing, I think about you know, I think about elements that might be found early in a story that foreshadow events later, but you know, they shouldn't be obvious right off the bat. In other words, that's not the same thing as setting up a question or a conflict at the end. I mean, I don't think of that as the same thing as setting up a conflict or a question at the end of the scene that begs to be answered. You know, so that's just a difference in probably interpretation of the word. But nevertheless, in my book, where there is foreshadowing in my book, it's just interwoven throughout. And
okay.
So yeah.
But that, if you didn't have that, think of how your book would read if you didn't have that. You know, throughout your book.
Yeah, well, you need it because, I mean, in life there's foreshadowing. You know, and we don't think about it. A lot of times, you know, as we go through conflicts in our life, as we go through circumstances or what have you, and then you look back sort of on the trajectory that puts you to where you are now, you're sort of like, oh, I didn't even see that was leading me to where I am now, you know, so.
And I love it when I read a book and an author drops something in about a character that you never saw coming. You felt like you knew this character really well, and then they, you know, hinted at something, and it was like, whoa, this is, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I
definitely have one of those in my book, too, one of those sort of bombs that gets dropped. And so it's pretty great. I love that, too.
Yeah, and then that makes you think, okay, what else don't I know?
Uh-huh.
You know, I thought I knew, so that's good. But another thing, now this is the one that I think most of us probably mess up the most. And so I'll let you talk a bit about this if you want here, backstory. Backstory, the point of that obviously is to reveal important story and character information.
Uh-huh.
And it's necessary, But I think an important thing to remind people of is that when you insert your backstory, you're stopping the momentum of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going back and explaining stuff, and you're stopping the momentum of the story. So this needs to be used sparingly and effectively.
That's right, and it needs to not be boring. We've talked about this when we've talked about character development, but it's really important to know your characters' backstories, and sometimes you do need to write backstory into your plot, but keep it interesting. And it's perfectly fine if you have pages upon pages of backstory written that your reader never reads because you don't ever put it in your book. But you can, you know, if you have the backstory written and it's almost as though you've got a biography for a certain character or a certain set of circumstances, it becomes history to the world of your novel. And so at that point you can write about it and reference events as backstory. And it keep things consistent because you don't want to try to just keep it all in your head and remember it because you might not remember all the details that you came up with for the backstory. So you want to have it written down somewhere, but not necessarily in your novel. But then as you do allude to backstory, make sure that what you do is interesting and that it moves the plot forward, that it's actually relevant and you're not just dropping it in just for the sake of it being, you know, just... I mean, I guess you can drop things in now and then that are just purely just fun, interesting backstory to sort of explain why a particular character is why they are, you know.
But yeah, but most of the things should have something to do with your story.
Yep.
You know, it needs to be relevant. Otherwise, it's just needs to be cut.
Yep. Yep.
And that's, but anyway, I wanted to talk about one of the ways that you can, explain backstory is through flashbacks.
Mm-hmm.
And as everything I have ever heard, and the one thing that's always consistent in every writer's conference or workshop or whatever is, these shouldn't be done at the beginning of your book, at least not by new authors. Best-selling authors can break all the rules. They can do anything they want. but agents and publishers don't like seeing flashbacks right off the bat and backstory as a general rule. Unless you've done something very creative and it's very essential to your story to do it this way, it does not need to be in the first 25% of your story.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about the percentages in, was it the last podcast?
Mm-hmm.
So I won't go into all that again, but the 25, 50, 25, you know, rule.
Thereabout,
but,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, well, anyway, if you're writing a series, I wanted to be sure and work this in. If you're writing a series, backstory is very important. So every novel should stand alone in terms of your plot, but they need the same backstory, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like in the Harry Potter series, I'm going to mention that because I think most people will know that.
Yes, yes.
Harry's past is the key to the story. You know, he has to find out who murdered his parents and consequently what he's going to do about it and all. So that backstory should be set up in book one.
Mm-hmm.
But it's revisited in all the books in the series so that new readers who may not have started at book one can learn what they need to know.
Well, not just that, but there are further layers that get unfolded, like the introduction of characters like Sirius Black and the guy who's the rat, I can't think of his name. But nevertheless, then Snape, you know, Snape's backstory, you know, that completely is ground shaking when the truth is found out about Snape's backstory in the series. And so, yes, definitely.
So I think if you have any questions about this, there's a lot of ways you can read some of your favorite authors, some of the best-selling authors and all that, and just see how people like J.K. Rowling and Jan Ivanovich and whoever else, you know, there's so many, how they've done it and successfully. And then you can get some better ideas there. But also, another thing we need to talk about here, another technique for advancing your plot is going to be dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And the point of dialogue always should be to move your story forward. So it should be relevant and it should sound authentic. And it, and another thing, I say I hate when I read these books that have these long monologues, where people just keep talking and,
I mean,
you just should not do that. There should be a dialogue, not a monologue. I think they refer to this as a lengthy static prose. But I just call it, a monologue. But I think that's what it's called. It's actually a lengthy static prose, and you don't want that.
No.
So you want to avoid long-winded statements or explanatory notes or whatever from one character in one particular time. Now, he can say a lot, but he needs to be interrupted, and maybe by another character or by some action, something that's happening there, and then kind of come back to it. But you just don't want a long span presented in that way.
Right. So. And not to mention the fact that while we're on the subject of dialogue, you and I might think that these things are obvious, but just let's talk about them just to cover all of our bases here. Then that is that dialogue needs to sound realistic. How can you tell your dialogue sounds realistic? You read it out loud. Read the dialogue out loud of your novel, because you will soon find, if you're writing dialogue and you're not very experienced at it yet, that there are going to be parts of your dialogue that really, once you're saying them out loud, don't sound like people speak. They don't sound like the way people talk. They're the way people write, but not the way they talk. And so you need to go through, and that means you might leave off, you might leave off little words at the beginning of a sentence that you would put in to make it correct as a written sentence, but you wouldn't say it if you're speaking, because people don't talk that way most of the time. Another thing is, all of those rules you learned when you were in middle school about trying to not use the word said too many times, throw them out, because you have to just stick with mostly you should be using said or asked. That's what I've read, and all the experts who talk about writing novels, they all say the same thing, and that is, you don't want to say said 50 different ways in a dialogue, because all it does is reinforces for the reader the fact that they're reading a dialogue rather than experiencing it as though it's actually happening. Wouldn't you agree that that's good advice?
Yeah, I mean, if they're screaming something, or in some other way, mm-hmm. doing something, you can say she cried.
Right.
But for the most part, yes, they don't like to see you get creative.
Right. And you shouldn't be saying, somebody commented, oh, she exclaimed, oh, she said, oh, he shouted, oh, he opined. Who cares? Just say said or asked most of the time. And then on those occasions when there really is emphasis needed, like, someone shouted or someone wailed, you can say that because you're not overdoing it. So,
right. That's a very good point you brought up, Sarah. Thanks for thinking to share that. So let's get down to the last P. The P is pacing.
Okay.
And pacing equals tension. Okay? And your tension, what does your tension have to do throughout a story? It has to build, right?
Mm-hmm.
So pacing is all about controlling the speed and flow at which a story is told. So pacing often depends on the genre. For example, in a cozy mystery, there better be a murder pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
That's just, within the first few pages of the book, there needs to be a murder. In an epic or historical fiction, the pacing can be more leisurely. And so it really does depend on that. But no matter what, you don't want to go so fast as to leave readers confused or disoriented.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, you don't want to go so slow where they nod off, or worse still, they just put your book down.
Yep.
So pacing is an important thing to get right with your thing. So, and something you need to think about here is how many scenes you're going to have in your story.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can successfully pace based on how many scenes you're going to have. But just be mindful of that as you go through your story there. But, Sarah, I'm thinking before we finish, there's actually a fourth P that maybe we should talk about just for a minute here, because this is one of those things that I know really stymies a lot of people. And so maybe you can speak to this. The fourth P I'm thinking about is prologue.
Mm-hmm.
Should an author add one to his story if he doesn't have one?
Yes, I have a lot to say about this. I'll condense it though. I do have a blog post about this on my
really?
Website. Yes, I do. As a matter of fact, because several weeks ago, when I first started revisions on my novel, I was just agonizing because I was really trying to figure out. There's a complex scheme in the story that affects the protagonist, and I did not want to have some hokey little backstory, thing where they're having to, where somebody's having to reveal this after the fact. And, you know, in dialogue, because it just seemed like it would be really lame that way. But yet, the action does take place before the story proper begins, as far as just this scheme, you know, the scheming between these two nefarious individuals. And because it takes place before the action of the novel begins, I finally said, you know, so many things that I had read said in general, you should avoid a prologue. You shouldn't, you know, prologues aren't something that most writers should use, because it really, if you're using a prologue, it just means you're not starting your novel at the right point. A lot of readers feel cheated when they have prologues, you know, that they have to read. But then, as it turns out, there are exceptions to those rules. And one of the exceptions is when you need to convey some information that you can't otherwise convey in the novel, because it does take place out of the timeline of your story. In other words, you would need to start the action way, way, way too early in order to have this, and it would be boring, and you know, you don't want to do that. So it's fine to have a prologue for something like that. There are a few circumstances in which a prologue is appropriate, but in general, it shouldn't be just used because you're too lazy to explain something somewhere else in the book. You know, if it's something that can be worked into the plot or in the story, that's great. You know, but I'll link to the post on my blog, so we don't have to rehash all that again.
Yeah, that's some great information, Sarah. I couldn't have said it better myself. Well, so let's do a little summary of what we talked about here today.
Okay.
There's three keys to novel writing: plot, pacing, and protagonist. Within your plot, there should be three C's, which is your conflict, complications, and your climax,
mm-hmm.
or your conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
You want to use techniques like dialogue, foreshadowing, and backstory to control your pacing, reveal character information, and thicken your plot.
Mm-hmm.
And these are things that need fixing in your second draft. I want to be sure and point that out here. Don't get bogged down in your first draft.
Mm-hmm.
With worrying with this too much, but this is the kind of stuff, because, you know, if you think about it, your idea and your main plot, your characters, your setting usually stays the same when you go into your second draft. It's the pacing and your scene sequence, including your backstory and your dialogue, that needs the most work. Do you agree?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. And then be sure your prologue is necessary to your story.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are the points that we want to make sure that we share today here. And then I have my quote.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yes. Okay. My quote of the day. F. Paul Wilson said, "Your novel better not be a story you're lukewarm about. You have to think this is really great."
I agree completely. And I, for one, love the novel I'm working on right now. So, and I'm sure that any of our fellow writers who are listening to this podcast, you know, want to feel the same way. If you don't even feel excited about it, there's no way that you can get your readers to feel excited about it. And that said, this is a great podcast. I think this is a really great idea, Terrence, and you definitely came up with some good formulas here, and we will put these little three P's and the three C's and possibly a hint to the fourth P, and I'll link to that blog post on the post accompanying this podcast. And people can see the podcast or listen to the podcast at my website, which is sarahwhitford.com. That's sarahwhitford.com. Or Terrence's website, which is terrencezepke.com. That's terrancezepke.com. And you can subscribe to us on iTunes, and we hope that you have enjoyed this episode and that you will be with us for the next one, which will be a wild card week. So thanks so much for joining us. Bye-bye.